It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to A Piece of Pie, the Queer Film Podcast. This is a very special episode. I am here once again, of course, with Max and Rob. And we have a special guest today. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a new Captain America. His name is Aaron Fisher, and he's gay. And I am here with my friend and the creator, Josh Trujillo. Hello, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You're our first comic book writer on the film podcast. We wanted to do a sort of follow-up to Marvel. Marvel's back in a big way this year with the Disney Plus shows. Black Widow just came out. They had a few more films coming out this year that we'll get into. But also, I wanted to talk about this gay Captain America because I think it's awesome. Can you tell us sort of, I mean, I've read it, but for the purposes of the pod, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so there's a new character, Aaron Fisher, who kind of takes on the mantle of Captain America. He's one of several that are in this miniseries, The United States of Captain America. So the idea is like Steve Rogers' Cap is going around the country trying to find his lost shield. It was stolen from him. And so along the way, he's meeting people who are inspired by Captain America, like Aaron. So Aaron's queer. He's a runaway. He's from Missouri. He's kind of a hard luck kid with a good attitude and a bit of a punk and just unapologetically queer. And I'm so excited for him to wield the shield, like they say.
Can you tell us a little bit about like just sort of how you came to be on the project?
Marvel knew for a while they were kind of putting this together, that they were going to have a miniseries with a bunch of new Captain Americas from different groups. And so I guess my name came up because of like, I don't know, my weird intersection of like teen heroes. I did a book called Dodge City, and I'm doing a book about a gay Revolutionary War hero, this nonfiction about General von Steuben. And so I think I kind of like triangulated my interest with superheroes and American history and queer stuff, like in just the right way for me to be a good fit for this. But honestly, it's been super easy to work with, and I helped come up with the design with co-creator Jan Bazalgowa. And we just owe a lot to Christopher Cantwell, who created the miniseries in the first place.
That's awesome. Honestly, when I heard about it and I heard that you had done it, it made sense as well. I was like, yeah, he's the perfect person to write this character. Because you and I have known each other for a long time. We went to see a bunch of Marvel movies together when I lived in LA. And so I know you have this like just this wealth of knowledge of these characters. So I was really excited to hear about it, and I was excited to pick it up. And thank you so much for coming on and talking Marvel and the MCU with us, which is what we're here for. But I will say, before we get really into it, I would love it. I think I said this to you. That sounds like a great idea for season two of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like them going around and like finding all these other people with shields that have picked it up in honor of Steve Rogers. Kevin Feige, if you're listening, which I know you're not, but get on that. Cause that sounds, I mean, I think that'd be awesome. That would be a great season two.
Well, I just Brian, want those Funko Pops.
Yes. Yes. I would love an Aaron Fisher Funko Pop for sure. What were we saying, Max?
That was my question for Brian, Josh, was who would be cast as Aaron, I think, in the inevitable TV series that's going to take place?
Oh, I'm so bad with this stuff. I don't even know. Who's the kid on Cobra Kai? Anyone watch Cobra Kai?
Oh no, I think we're too gay here.
Okay, maybe not. I feel like this is something Rob would have a better answer to for which young heartthrob could play Aaron.
The only one, in my head, instinctively, I'm like, well, you need like an out gay actor. And I don't know if it never really says how old this Captain America is, but the only one I can think of in that age range is like the kid from the Real O'Neills.
He's like 19, Ryan, 20, 21.
Take that back out of the universe. Don't even like let that out.
I'm just trying to think of like young queer actors. Kenan Lonsdale would be great. I really do. I just think that you have to go somewhat obscure for an out character in his early 20s.
Yeah, I think even my suggestion, I have no idea if they're queer or not.
Yeah.
I would just like, he's handsome and in that age range. That's all I've got.
Yeah. And obviously none of us want to see a straight actor play him. So
no.
Like I said, we're talking MCU. This is sort of our MCU part three. We most recently, which was about 2 years ago by now, discussed Endgame. And now we're just here to talk about, obviously, Black Widow just came out, and the Disney Plus shows, the finale for Loki just aired last week. But we're actually going to do what we always do. We're going to go in order. So we're going to start with WandaVision. So we'll start with WandaVision, which was the first Disney Plus show. It debuted early this year with Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany playing their Wanda and Vision characters, respectively, married in a make-believe sitcom world. It remains post-Loki still my favorite of the MCU shows. What do you guys think?
I dug it. I was really into WandaVision from like the get-go, like a big, you know this about me, Brian and Rob too. I'm like a big sitcom guy and classic TV and Nick at Night. And I thought all of the like, not the parodies, but like the little realities we went into were so pitch perfect. And I love the kind of unspooling mystery. Like I'm not a fan of mystery box shows, but this was one I could really get behind. And I thought it kind of like unraveled pretty nicely. I'm very pro WandaVision. It got a little sloppy towards the end, but I feel like it can be forgiven.
Yeah, the last episode did turn into sort of a Marvel beam in the sky and characters flying around it, shooting beams at each other. I'm with you. Like all the way up until that, I thought it was really great. And the way it unraveled and just slowly like an onion, you know, you just kind of peel back these layers. I thought they did it really well.
I think that's why I enjoyed it the most too, Brian, was that this was the first show to premiere and to be on television. And at that point in the quarantine, that it really did feel different and a little bit revolutionary for them, that they had gone from far afield from Endgame at this point and spent the first two episodes, you know, entirely in black and white in a whole different world, and really wanted to test people's patience for once rather than just give them the goods for 2 hours and 3 hours. So that was where, you know, my slight disappointment by the end of the series happened though too, is that, oh, this really is just more table setting for the next phase. Oh, this is really, you know, becoming another kind of, you know, superpowers versus superpowers light show. It's turning, you know, Wanda back into twirling her wrists and, you know, shooting red beams. Whereas I was really enjoying where they were going for it for the majority of it, really embracing the old style Marvel weirdness and really, you know, obviously watched a lot of David Lynch films, obviously watched a lot of Lost, took a lot of influences that I didn't expect Marvel to make, and was really a great surprise.
Yeah, I think it worked out so well for them that, I mean, it was supposed to come out after Black Widow and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I believe. I believe it was supposed to actually be in an alternate universe without the pandemic, but this is the third one we're talking about this evening. And I think having such a dramatic departure from what we're used to seeing from the MCU with this completely different style, but done in a way that I thought did really serve the story. It wasn't, I was worried at first that the pastiche to these sitcoms was going to be kind of a distraction from the story they were trying to tell. And I think it ended up serving the story, remarkably well. And, you know, I didn't mind the giant fight in the sky as much as I know as you guys did. I felt like that was something that they had to put in a something with the Marvel logo at some point. And I thought the fight felt dramatically earned. I wish it was maybe resolved in a more unique way, but I knew the finale was going to end up somewhere in that direction.
Yeah, it just felt like getting yanked back down to the theme park, you know? It's like, it was almost like Marvel's final response to Martin Scorsese, where they're like, all right, we're not films? Well, then we're going to take everybody else's style. We're going to be as weird as we possibly can. But I also say that in, like, it's somewhat of a palatable weirdness. It's kind of the algorithm and a giant corporate decision to be like, this is probably the most that we can get away with. Although I always love seeing Emma Caulfield pop up, and she was my favorite part of definitely the second episode too. But you know, when you got things like Legion, you know, of Marvel properties out there that is really avant-garde and can really push its weirdness, WandaVision seems a little bit more, you know, like the Marvel popcorn fair that it's obviously setting up. But for a brief time, it was really fun to have this really meta approach that Marvel's often known for in the comic books. And to, you know, it's kind of obvious why I think they bumped that up in TV too. They could have had probably Falcon and the Soldier first, but they were like, well, this is obviously a better product. People are gonna be talking about this more. People are gonna be confused by this. People might not even like it at first. And that buys its own publicity.
Yeah, it was smart too to put the first two episodes out as opposed to just one a week, because by the end of the second episode, it like leads you to believe, like it kind of leads you on a cliffhanger in this way where you're like, okay, you can kind of get the sense that you're going to start to figure things out. But whereas the first one, I think the pilot is the most singularly sort of weird, because taken on its own, I don't think it would, I think it works on its own. Like, you don't know these characters at all. And then as you start to sort of learn more about it, the way they ease into it really works for the story, because it, I think even Wanda, by the end, like you realize that Wanda didn't really know what she was doing, and she's kind of learning it all with us. Like at first, she's just kind of going along with it and having fun. And even Vision too, I feel like by the third episode, he's like, I don't know what's going on. You know, so you start to kind of clue into that stuff, and it unravels in that interesting way.
Well, they had to dump the two black and white episodes first because it turns color, and they had to promise the audience, we're done with this.
Yeah, that too.
These movies never make any money. No one's interested in black and white.
Yeah.
We move on, I promise.
And Elizabeth Olsen was just nominated for an Emmy for this, which I thought was fantastic, because I thought she was really great in it. Her and Paul Bettany really sort of seal it with they get every genre right. She does Mary Tyler Moore and Modern Family just as well.
Well, it was nice to see that, you know, the good majority of the cast was nominated. You had Paul Bettany too, and Catherine Hahn. I think she's probably a shoe-in in the way that they've set that up. But yeah, I think this really broke through, and Catherine Hahn obviously became our meme queen. Although, you know, my ex-boyfriend is a pretty big Marvel nerd, so I think by the end of the first episode, he had texted me and told me exactly who the character was and her history in Salem. So it was like, it was a nerd spoiling pretty early on. Whereas, you know, like, I didn't really have a lot of entry or knew a lot about this show, and it was still, I think, threaded in a nice surprise that ends up in, you know, probably the catchiest song that I've heard all year.
With some of these characters, they always do like a really radical reimagining, you know. Sometimes we were like, oh, I never really thought about it, what a modern take. And then for this one, they just did the witch thing. We're like, oh yeah, she's just a witch from Salem. And I'm like, cool, I can roll with that, let's do that.
It's like a nice Occam's razor, Josh. It's just kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. Is an American,
they try to ground these things so much, and then for this one, they're just like, no, she's just a witch from the Salem witch trials.
She's like an embodiment of that, like, you know, meme, or the, you know, we are the daughters of Salem that you did not burn.
You know, you touched on this a little bit, Brian, with Wanda not kind of realizing that she was doing all of this. I think a fear that, you know, I had heard out there in the world during the first couple of episodes, and I'm so glad was not realized, was that this was going to turn into another like woman driven mad with grief, you know, taking it out on the world. And with the character's history in the comics, it was really easy to see why everyone was kind of afraid that it was going there. I think it was so smart, you know, in kind of modernizing and adapting for the MCU, that they had this, you know, kind of not be on her radar as of something that was happening. It wasn't a conscious decision.
Well, that's why I think the casting ended up being a stroke of genius. Was obviously this was a character that was not well served by the movies, but was promised by, you know, the corporate overlord said, we'll get to you, we'll get to you, we'll get to you, you'll have your moment. And that it ended up being a TV series at first was like, ah, they're just shuttling to the background, you know, just checking a box, which we'll get to Black Widow, which that definitely feels like. But that this one was invested with actors that were all in, knowing that this was their moment. You know, like Brian said, like they were ready to win awards for this finally. They knew that this wasn't just going to be the pop, you know, that they could go through the motions or, you know, basically just show up for the paycheck like Robert Downey Jr. at this point. And so they did the homework. They understood the assignment. Brian, I will say, you know, the comedy stylings of Paul Bettany in the first two episodes get a little bit much. Or maybe he just doesn't look the same in black and white, where it's just kind of like, all right, we're seeing the flop sweat a little bit. But when it settles into its groove, you know, especially hits it, you know, post-Brady's and everything else, the real vulnerabilities start to show through. The real things that Rob was talking about of like, I mean, how tired are we of stories about like, you know, it's a metaphor for depression, it's a metaphor for grief, or this is about this. But I thought that they handled it very well for, you know, for something that came from the biggest movie of all time, or in its shadow, at least. Well, Brian, what I had to look up the showrunner creator, Matt Shakman, I did not know any of his credits. I did a little bit of a Wikipedia dive, but it does seem like he was a LA theater gay that was a really good TV journeyman that, you know, directed episodes of 6 Feet Under or Game of Thrones. He's directed at least one good episode of most every good show there's been for almost like two decades now. And it didn't very much seem like this guy, like, ah, I've got my chance. I've got my chance to really show off here. And like, again, somebody who really wants to impress, which I appreciate that. You know, Brian, I'd rather somebody try way too hard than way too less. And well, we're about to get to Falcon and the Soldier, so.
Well, he's about to do Star Trek. He's doing the next Star Trek movie.
It was definitely like showing off for his next audition. I think it held together a lot more than it should have.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been promised the Star Trek sequel for like half of my life at this point.
Wasn't Chris Hemsworth going to reprise his role at some point?
Yeah, they were going to do a timey-wimey thing with it.
Anybody else have anything that they wanted to add about WandaVision, or should we move right on to probably, like I said, everybody's least favorite Marvel show so far?
You know, the one thing I'll add is just that, you know, it made me so happy to see her in the Scarlet Widow, the Scarlet Witch outfit after
the Halloween knockoff costume that you get at like the Halloween Alley is the Scarlet Widow.
I mean, honestly, even that one made me so happy after Joss Whedon like infamously like haughtily told her like you will never be in that outfit. So for them to then course correct and put her not only in that outfit, but in the most Halloween costumey version of that outfit possible, even if just for an episode, just was delightful to me. I loved it. And I, from what I hear, Elizabeth Olsen really, really loved it too.
Yeah. So this was the sort of follow-up to Captain America's saga where, Sam Wilson was given at the end of Endgame was given the shield by Captain America himself, and now he has to contend with having the shield, and he gives it up, and the United States government gives it to some other white guy, and that goes horribly wrong, and then he decides to become Captain America after all. And allegedly there was a pandemic plot line that was deleted from this. Have you heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
There was apparently, I think it's in the first episode, they go and they're picking up vaccines for something. And then Carly's mother is dying of something, or I don't know if it's her mother, but a character she's close to is dying of an unspecified disease. And apparently there was a bunch of pandemic stuff that was cut out due to the real life pandemic, which is really disappointing because the show was really uneven. And it really did kind of feel like something was missing. And I can only imagine that it couldn't have been much worse if they'd kept it. It might have been a little bit better.
Yeah, Carly and her team, apparently a lot of their dialogue is just ADR. And it is, that is definitely the theory that happened and factored in. Have we gotten official confirmation, or is that just a strong suspicion on everyone's
part? I think it's a strong suspicion. No one's really ever said.
Well, we traffic in conspiracy theories here, so.
Yeah, I mean, it holds up because, like I said, I do think it's sort of the least of the three shows. It does feel sort of all over the map, story-wise. Some things kind of, a whole bunch of stuff kind of just happens because it needed to happen, which of course is not just, I mean, maybe that's not bad editing. Maybe that's just bad writing. Maybe that's just the way this was always going to go.
Yeah, can someone remind me what actually happens in the episodes? It's basically a cop buddy drama. You know, I did watch this one quickly, but it seems kind of like something that could have been on CBS.
Yeah, like it wasn't very good.
There were really great moments. There were I thought there were some really strong moments, and I think that was what was more disappointing than anything was that. You know, you had a lot of potential telling the story of what John Walker can get away with is this blonde white Captain America and the pushback that that both Isaiah and Sam deal with. And they just for as incredible as the ending of an episode was with the shield just drenched in blood after the state authorized sanctioned Captain America kills this individual, they just didn't follow up on some of the tough conversations or results that needed to follow. The fact that you go from that to having John Walker like teaming up with them like to help save the day at the end without a lot happening in between, it was just so odd and bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of it falls short is that, like I said, I don't know if it's a writing problem or an editing problem where kind of just things kind of just happen. And like, it doesn't follow through with any of that stuff. It has a scene of Sam and Bucky getting stopped by the police and everybody's like, don't you know who this is? And that kind of just happens and nobody talks about it. And there's a brief conversation at the very end where Bucky is saying like, Steve Rogers and I never thought about what it might mean for a black man to carry the shield. And it kind of feels like the show didn't really ever think about it either, at least in any great depth. It kind of just mentions stuff. It's like, oh, look, it happens to superheroes too or something.
I will say that I think the strength of the two leads really helped paper over some of the plot error issues there might have been. Like even kind of like the much chided bank scene, I thought that Anthony Mackie sold it really well. Or like the small moments where they're just like acting like people. There's like a montage at the end of the last episode where like Bucky's like lifting up some kids or something. And I'm like, I want this show. I want like Kindergarten Winter Soldier.
Yes, please.
And like another case of poor Emily Van Camp being underutilized. My sweet Rebecca from Brothers and Sisters.
So she is revealed, spoiler alerts, to be sort of the, what was it?
The power broker.
I kept wanting to say Taskmaster. I don't know why. She's That's sort of...
Another yeah. Underutilized, underdeveloped female villain.
Right. but my theory with that is that she's going to be a Skrull. And she's not really Sharon Carter.
I remember when you told me that, and like, honestly, it made me so happy. And you just better fucking be right. Because like, I was so upset that they would tarnish the character of Sharon Carter by turning her into a villain without any really good, actually for any reason. Like, it's Sharon Carter, she's one of the good ones. You just it but now I'm here for it, and it means that she has another contract and she'll be in Secret Invasion, and it'll be great. So you
I'm hoping for some twisting and turning, and maybe she's justified, but I don't know. We'll see. The Skrull theory I hadn't heard yet. That's pretty good.
That's my theory, just because of what's I mean, the Skrulls have already been introduced. I know there's Secret Wars coming. Not Secret Wars. What's it called?
Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion. There's that. I know that's coming. Also on Disney Plus. So that was just my theory. Because otherwise, yeah, it doesn't make sense otherwise.
Brian, I will say, while a lot of this was, you know, somewhat maybe fast-forwardable for me, a lot of this was fast-forwardable for me, but I will say that it did include two of my favorite side characters out of the recent phase, or bringing Daniel Brühl back as Helmut Zemo worked a lot for me, and I just find him so cute. But then I think possibly my new favorite MCU character is going to have to be Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I'm so glad that she's a part of it now.
Yeah. She made me really happy when she showed up on screen. The shows drop at 2 a.m. my time, and I keep late hours, and I'm usually up at 3 a.m. anyway, so I usually will watch right at 2, which is nice for me, because when stuff like that happens, I've watched it as soon as I can. Like, there's no... I know that would have been spoiled for me by the internet.
The first to Twitter.
Yeah, and plus, I feel like I am such a known Julia Louis-Dreyfus fan that I feel like somebody would have texted me. Although nobody did text me, so maybe not.
She's basically like the last person I would have ever expected to see in one of these things.
Exactly.
Especially in like what seems to be an ongoing capacity.
I have a theory, though, that she's only going to be in scenes approximately that long. And she's going to work for like a day at a time for all of her projects. I mean, maybe she'll do all in like a week, but like that'll be five different projects she shows up in. I don't see her getting like a large arc is what I'm saying. I don't know.
Well, I
have a theory for her little team she's putting together, but we can talk about that later.
We'll talk about that after Black Widow.
Yeah.
Which I guess is where it would be next.
Technically.
Right? Since it technically ended before Loki ended.
Sure.
Depending on when you saw it.
Let's end on a higher note.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. It's like, I kind of wanted to end on the Loki stuff, because I know that's going to be, there's going to be a lot of speculation there. So we'll go to, unless anyone else has anything else they want to say. I did want to throw in that, I don't know the actress's name, but she plays Felicity Porter's therapist on Felicity, and also Bucky's therapist. And so as far as I'm concerned, Felicity and Bucky have the same therapist.
This is canon.
It's canon.
It exists in the same JJ.
Felicity is in the MCU. It's canon. So Black Widow, long delayed, not just by the COVID pandemic, but by upper studio heads at Marvel that didn't want a female-led movie for the longest time. And so Black Widow is finally getting a sort of posthumous, movie. Biopic, prequel.
A posthumous is the correct word, since
yes, it's yes.
Placed as a prequel.
Yeah.
Or prehumous.
Yeah. I liked it fine. I know Rob didn't like it much, so I'll go to Rob first.
Yeah, then you can all tear me down. No, I mean, I think this is just the kind of movie that we expected from Marvel when Captain America, The First Avenger, Thor, you know, when those movies were coming out, we tolerated it a little bit with like Doctor Strange. Like, these movies are fine. They have some great sequences that are fun to watch, but I just expect more from my Marvel after, you know, Infinity War, Endgame, Far From Home, WandaVision. You know, I expected more than this. You know, perfunctory and fine just didn't live up to what I know that they can do. So while I had some nice moments, most of them involving Florence Pugh or the hot guy from Looking in Handmaid's Tale, like, I
ultimately like didn't need David Harbour and Rachel Weisz dropping in and out of accent for 2.5 hours.
That's fair. The accents were my least favorite thing about the whole movie, for sure.
It got a little bit moose and squirrel, as it always does. Yeah, you know, we've been throwing around the word perfunctory, and, you know, that's how I feel about this, too. I think I enjoyed it a bit more than you, Rom, because, you know, it's a good cast. It's got some ladies. I am absolutely in love, in gay love with Florence Pugh. But, you know, it's a MacGuffin plot. It's a prequel. It really has no stakes because we know there's no change in those stakes. So it's just, unfortunately, a lot of filler. And can I be honest? I just do not get David Harbour. I never have. Not back in Brokeback Mountain, not when I saw him on stage in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, not even Stranger Things. I don't know. He's not on my wavelength, I'm not on his. And like you said, it could have been a much more streamlined and interesting movie if they didn't go, you know, with these cliches. Like, why go with the watered down Americans plot when the Americans did it better? You know, like, just have the girls, you know, do something, you know?
There is an interesting story to be told here. I was so excited for, like, Marvel has gone from doing like straight up superhero action movies. So it's always that with a layer of something else. With WandaVision, it was the sitcom tropes. You know, Far From Home is like a teen travel movie. This, you know, could have been like August Marvel County, like with the family dynamics. And that would have been incredible. And like, there were hints of that, but it felt like they were clearly afraid that that was not a movie that we were going to want to watch. And maybe I would have been the only one happy with that. But that's what I would have done to make that a story worth telling. There has to be a why you're telling this story if it's going to be a prequel that doesn't change anything about these characters that we know.
Yeah, it feels like this movie, as much as it was to give Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow, you know, like the due she's probably due at this point, it mostly felt like a setup for Florence Pugh's character, who was sensational. I actually preferred Rachel Weisz, but I'm just a sucker for her in general. I don't care what accent she slipped in and out of, as long as she's not abusing the hogs.
And they can't take that Oscar away from her either, so.
That's right. I still haven't seen, what was that, The Constant Gardener?
Yeah, she's great in it.
I haven't seen it, honestly.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to bring up Scorsese again, shoot me, but like, this is exactly the movie I think that he was talking about. Like, this isn't really a film or even a movie. This is a return trip to the theme park. This is going on the same ride that you like for the third or the fourth time using the Fast Pass. You know, some people are going to be really into it because it's exactly what they want. And some people like us might be a little bit more sick to our stomach by the fourth ride.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I'm one who I think I have a stronger stomach for it. It felt very, like, it's definitely like bottom tier Marvel. It feels very sort of like watered down Winter Soldier. Captain America, Winter Soldier, the movie, not the TV show that we just talked about, is one of my favorite Marvel films. And I wanted it to be more like that. And it wasn't, it felt too much like that, where it was like this secret villain with a tie to the past of the main character. And then like this, like sidekick, like, I don't know. It was too much like the Captain America, Winter Soldier in those ways for me to really love it, but I had a good time with it. Like, I thought it was fun.
To a point, Brian, that you think that it's just like, is this what they're doing? Is this a mirror version of Winter Soldier? Is this her version, you know, away from Steve? But like Rob said, like, there just isn't any creative choice to be kind of like stealing, you know, even stealing something fun from another movie or another series. It's just kind of rote, but enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah, and some of the stuff was very eye-rolly, like prequel kind of prequel-itis, where you're like, we have to mention something that you see later, and there's that like box of hair dye. Like, really? really, she was
they could have done so much worse than that. I don't think you understand what a bad case of prequelitis looks like. It's about the hair dye threw you off. I kept expecting, I even told my friends going into it, I'm like, I don't have any spoilers, but I bet Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. are going to show up to like wink to the camera and leave. Because it's a prequel, you got to have those prequel characters floating around. And this movie, for some reason, chose the really reserved path, I'd say, in that way. But also in terms of the action, they went 150% when they could have just gone, even 100% would have been like appropriate. Like some of those action sequences just like break credibility beyond even what a super soldier would be able to do. And that was like a little frustrating, but also I get the point.
But it's like having better technology in the past than Star Wars because of the prequels. It's just kind of like, oh, we've got better CGI and I don't know. It's just, they're defaulting to, again, the traditional superheroes punching each other scenes, sprinkle them three or four times throughout repeat.
Yeah, like sliding down a rooftop that's falling in the air and jumping, like that whole thing was just sort of exhausting.
It was cool though. I will give it that.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. I'm not gonna.
I was just like this is insane and doesn't reflect reality in any way.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't say I didn't enjoy it. I like the white suits too.
They were a little stormtrooper for me. TBH.
It's fair. It reminded me of like G.I. Joe.
Oh, you mean the new movie versions?
No, just like the action figures with like the, I feel like we had.
Yeah, they're figures. Like their winter costumes or whatever.
Yeah,
Well,
I will say, Brian, I saw this one at home. I didn't go to a theater, which I probably should have. And it did get me thinking, you know, and watching a lot of these TV shows, though, too, is that like something feels a little missing, even as much as I love WandaVision. And basically, I was like, oh, an audience, sold out audiences. Huge theaters where you can share this experience. That's why I'm like, that's why I enjoyed, you know, so much Marvel up until now, was that it was a communal experience. And a lot of this lately has just been feeling like, you know, missing that portion. I start to look at a lot more of the flaws. I start to look at a lot more of the strings dangling, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what, Max? I went with Brian and another friend on opening night. And granted, I was tearing up when that Marvel logo started and all those characters. I was like, we're back in the movies. The audience reaction was really tepid for an opening night crowd. Like I think there was some half-hearted applause at the end.
And you can't blame anyone on quarantine reentry, can you?
Yeah, I remember telling you, Rob, before we went, I was basically said something to the effect of like, I'm more excited just to go see a Marvel movie in the theater than I am to see Black Widow. Mm-hmm. And it could have been anything. I am excited for Shang-Chi, which is coming out in September. That looks really good. That will probably be just another sort of like fill in the blanks origin story though. Did you want to talk about your theory, Josh?
With Julia Louis-Dreyfus? So, I mean, it's clear that she's getting together a team, but I think she's putting together a team that directly mirrors the original, was it 7 Avengers? So she has her like Captain America now because she has that guy, Kevin Walker. And then she has her Black Widow now. And then I'm guessing through Hawkeye, she'll get her Hawkeye. And then through Armor Wars, we'll get the Iron Man comparison. And so just one by one, we'll have like our Dark Mirror Avengers basically. Like everyone's saying Thunderbolts, but I don't think that's quite true. I think she's making basically like a Bizarro Avengers team.
Who's going to be her Hulk?
Abomination.
Oh, that's right. They're bringing him back.
Yeah, he's in the Shang-Chi trailer.
That's right.
Which is a really weird place to put him in, but I'm curious how this will end up.
That's Disney.
That's creative to your theory. It's like, don't forget about this guy, even though he's in a Universal movie.
Tim Roth is confirmed for She-Hulk. So they're bringing him back in that way. So yeah, that actually tracks. Like that's her Hulk.
I do love that they're bringing them back and it feels more like the comics where it's not like we have to have like not only the heroes can re-enter the picture, but the bad guys can too. Like I'm sorry, I may be the only one, but I am excited for Corey Stoll to be coming back to the MCU.
Is he coming back?
Mm-hmm.
When yeah. he's really coming back from Ant-Man 1?
Yeah. Yeah. And in Loki, I think you sent me this, Brian, the giant helmet for Yellow Jacket is like in the wasteland in the Journey to the Mystery.
Oh, I love that. Please.
Yeah. The sexiest bald man in the world.
But yeah, so Loki, the third and most recent of the Disney Plus shows, centers on Tom Hiddleston as the titular Loki, the god of mischief, right after he jumps into a wormhole at the end of Endgame. Once again, everything is coming off right off the end of Endgame, as these things do. And from there, fast forward to the end, and we now have the multiverse introduced finally in the MCU. What did everybody think of this one?
I really dug it. I thought this was like a nice layer of like cynicism to the Marvel Universe. And I'm not a Doctor Who guy. I mean, this clearly had its like Doctor Who influences on its sleeve. But this was a digestible version of that for me. It felt very cinematic, I guess, but it kind of defied my expectations at every turn. Like, I don't like Doctor Who. I don't like Tom Hiddleston. I don't really like kind of like I said earlier, mystery box shows, but this one like really surprised me every step of the way.
It was such candy for me to like, to have them go there with all of the different Lokis who have like shown up in the comics over the years, to give me Lady Loki, to give me Kid Loki, to give me Classic Loki, like to give me like President Loki, even like, and give me like the alligator Loki or crocodile Loki that I didn't even know I needed in my life. Like this all just made me so happy. And it was just like, it was, even when we have those moments of, you know, WandaVision having to like go into like the bizarre, like the fight in the sky at the end, it's nice to have moments like that with all these different Lokis that pay homage to like where all of these stories like, you know, came from. I mean, Frog Thor in the jar made me so happy. Just all those little moments. And this, I think out of all of the shows that were on Disney Plus, this one had the most intense consequences for the MCU. You know, we see the creation of the multiverse before our eyes, which is going to directly lead us into, you know, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange 2, and this new phase.
I had a lot of fun too. You know, I will admit, I had to cram all of these at the end, so there's a little bit of almost fatigue factor for me of a lot of this table setting, which I still think WandaVision is the best centerpiece of that table. But you know, but this is again at least, you know, a corporate entity that could be playing it a lot more safe, taking some chances here, having some more fun influences. Josh, I'm a big fan of Doctor Who, so there was a lot of fun to be had on this. But it's also wearing a lot of those influences, you know, a little bit more palatable too, I think. So it is, like you say, Doctor Who. I caught a lot of Rick and Morty in there. You know, a lot of the time variance authority, I just had to keep thinking about Key and Peele as Langoliers in Rick and Morty, and a lot of the other type of time travel and in multiverse stuff that came before it. But it became a pretty good stew. And Rob, like you said, I had no clue that this was from the comic books or there were all these references. I kind of had an inkling, or I'd definitely read a review that would make mention to it. But obviously this is something that was made as catnip and with a lot of affection for people who have got the deeper history or have taken a deeper dive.
I would say it's also the only one who has that we have a confirmed season 2 for, which will be interesting to see how that picks up again after, I mean, because certainly there will be more movies that are kind of affect the status quo before that season 2 comes out.
Do you think that it could and I don't know, but I feel like all of the multiverse stuff, like Spider-Man 2 and Doctor Strange, Spider-Man 3 and Doctor Strange 2, could all kind of be happening. But then you can still go back and pick up where they leave off with Loki.
That's true. That's true.
And have him then interact. And because apparently now they're saying he's going to be in Doctor Strange.
Interesting.
Oh, is that confirmed?
I don't think it's confirmed, no. But that was what I read, like, basically after the finale. Was that there was a rumor. It's not confirmed, but.
This Doctor Strange movie sounds wacky. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. I'm so excited too, Josh.
I'm excited for Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi hasn't done a good movie in a while. Drag Me to Hell was his last good one. He did that Oz movie, but we're not talking about that.
And he had made the best Marvel movie, you know, under Sony, but before all of this and the MCU too. So it's nice to have somebody who knows what they're doing, but also will take them into more extreme places that they can trust him to do so.
Yeah.
And I know it's unpopular, but Doctor Strange was one of my favorites of the more recent years though, too. So Brian, you know, us both as stoners, I'm surprised that one doesn't get a lot more replay in your house.
That scene does, like all the colorful stuff when he's going through, basically when he meets the Ancient One, that stuff is cool when you're stoned, but I don't want to watch the whole movie. But I've watched the airport scene from Civil War more than I've seen Civil War. So I sometimes I'll go through and just do that.
It's true. These are long movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I just want Giant Man. I don't know.
But
make of that what you will.
Doctor Strange, I'm looking forward to. And it's also got that amazing subtitle too, Multiverse of Madness. I feel like this is the right tone to be striking. And Loki was a good entry point into this madness.
You know, speaking of, I mean, how magnetic and dynamic and sexy was Jonathan Majors as King? If you had ever told me that I would find any iteration of King the Conqueror hot and sexy, I would have thought you were crazy. But ooh boy, that was a fun performance. Like, he was having a good time, and it makes me so excited that I think they're setting him up. He's our new Thanos. He's the big bad for a while. And I could not be happier.
So much more interesting than Thanos too, at least so far.
The way he chose to deliver that character, I think in and of itself just makes it so much more interesting. But yes, also just, yeah, in every sense of it.
Yeah, no, I was reading an interview, I think it was from the Hollywood Reporter, with the director, and she was talking about how she was in casting. She was with basically Peyton Reed, the director of Ant-Man, and Kevin Feige. Like, they were all together on casting, and there's a bunch of different versions of Kang. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to be who we're going to see next time. And mm-hmm. they were like, yes, but the thing was he has to sell all of it. And he was just the best. He was just one of the best actors we saw. And yeah. So I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited to see what he does, because it's going to be so different. As much as I want to see more of this guy, I probably won't, but I'm excited to see what they do with it.
100%. It's going to catch us off guard again with this portrayal.
Yeah.
I can't believe we have to wait years for, was it Quantum Mania?
Yeah.
A wild title. What a
stupid fucking name that I love. Like,
I am 110% in for Quantum Mania.
Yes.
I hope we get Kang before then. I don't know how or where, but I'll take him anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know. We were talking about how, Rob, you had mentioned Black Widow. How you would have liked to have seen the sort of the character scenes of the family as they were interacting. And it reminded me actually of Loki, because I think what the thing that Loki does best, that certainly out of all the three of these shows, is there's at least two episodes, probably three if you count the finale, where much of the episode is just two characters or three characters just talking and having these character moments. And that was what I loved about Loki, was that it took the time to give you those interactions, because those interactions obviously like are telling a larger story, but they also inform the character and they make him really relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why it's on TV. You know, I'm a little bit of a classicist, you know, like things, some things can be plays on stage. Some things can be TV. Some things should be movie. You know, give me a reason why each are each. And TVs were always like, we have extra time. We have extra time to spend with these characters. We have extra time to build these things. And so that's where whenever these shows dip more into the, you know, the rote Marvel action scenes is generally when my brain started to turn off a bit more, because I'm just kind of like, yeah, I can see that like in any of the 20 movies they did before, versus like what they were doing when they had intimate character moments or more close-ups or time to just hang out with each other.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Max. You know, to that point, like I want like the alternate universe version where Falcon and the Winter Soldier is just a 2.5 hour blockbuster, and Black Widow is the 6 hour family drama. Like give me that. And I think both of what I think what they were trying to do with both works better if they swap the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think it's probably a smart idea if Marvel continues to think of, you know, boundaries and lines here. Otherwise it's just going to kind of come to all of a mediocre middle. We're going to get more things like Black Widow or Falcon the Winter Soldier, unless you really invest in why you're telling this story this way, rather than feeling like, well, this is the brand and we have time on television. We have our own channel now. We have all these actors under contract still. And again, most of what we discussed tonight, I think, avoids that. But if they aren't careful and still like, well, we can dump this movie to Disney Plus, or we'll just turn this one into 6 episodes, you know, they might get themselves in trouble in the future. But for the time being, using the channel and these TV shows to set the table for a lot of weirdness to come while still making a lot of enjoyable things, they threaded a pretty tricky needle and did it during quarantine.
And you know, it makes me like, it just is another way I think of like honoring the original medium of comics. Like it feels so much like, you know, the movies or the big event series, and then you have, you know, every event series has its little like side mini series for each of the individual titles, and you know, those are what the TV shows kind of feel like to me, though they're having a much bigger impact on the status quo than some of those tie-in issues of the comics to the events ever did.
What was the last biggest movie of all time? Was it Titanic before Endgame?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Imagine.
Avatar.
Okay, so Avatar, or even like, yeah, Avatar. Could you imagine if there was like a dozen TV series spinning out of the success of Avatar, or like all these spin-off movies?
Any ideas? Like,
I mean, I challenge him. Consider this a formal challenge.
Anything to keep him tied up and busy, right? And money goes in his pockets.
No, he's still following through on his original threat. We're still getting 3 more Avatar movies.
Oh, wasn't there like 5 more or something? I thought there was like...
I think he's down to 3 now. He's still working on 2, which is like...
You can't do that against James Cameron.
Hey, James Cameron, he still always knows what people want to see. And we're all going to say the same thing. It's going to bomb. It's going to bomb. And then when Ocean World 7 comes out, we're going to go, ooh.
You know, Josh, I just can't. I'm thinking back of your example, and I really wish it was Titanic, because now I'm thinking about like the like 10 follow-up movies and 5 TV shows about Titanic.
The Molly Brown show. That yes. Couple holding hands.
I really wanted.
So, we talked about the multiverse and how so much of these TV shows are influencing the status quo. When these were all announced, one of them that was announced with all of these other ones was What If, which at the time seemed like it was just going to be a series of episodes that were literally What If, that had no effect on the main story. But with the multiverse coming out this way beforehand, do you think that they will potentially bring them together? Maybe we'll get a live action Captain Carter or something along those lines down the line, or are these just going to be one-offs? And granted, this is all just speculation, so
I hope they're one-offs. Like, I mean, I loved the What If comic series as a kid. Like, if I was like gonna pick up a comic, it was like usually one of those. Like, I ate that shit up. I think in part because it was like a contained universe, like I knew I didn't need to know a lot of like extra continuity that was overwhelming at the time. But I really hope, like, I don't care if it ever serves the story, then I am all for it. But I would rather them almost find something else that serves the story and let these just be what they are. But I reserve the right to change my mind if I like see Aunt May as Spider-Man someday and really need that to happen. And
I want to see every dumb what if you can get on in that multiverse of madness. I just want quick cuts of zombies and people having eye patches and every costume combination you could come up with.
So they're going to go full Spider-Verse on it then.
I mean, they're going to, that Spider-Man movie sounds like it might go all Spider-Verse.
I mean, Amy Pascal was like, okay, well, we did one thing right. Let's try to do it again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And because you've got Venom 2 coming out and Mobius, and I don't remember which one, but one of them, I think it's.
Did you really call it Venom 2 and not call it by its subtitle as well?
I refuse to say that full subtitle.
I think that should be illegal. When you're referring to Venom 2, it has to be Let There Be Carnage.
I love Venom.
I hate that those four words together so much, and I don't know why. And it's so stupid. I hate it. I can't believe that's a real movie title.
The problem is they're going to try to really lean into the camp rather than the accidental magic they made last time. Or maybe he just has a different voice for Venom this time. But I just remember laughing myself silly in the theater every time he's like, Adi.
I remember being in a packed movie theater in Orange County, and there were dads who kept barging into the theater to stand in the back and watch the movie while their kids were watching Trolls or whatever. They're like, okay, my kids are seated. They've got their popcorn. I'm going to go across the hall and watch a Venom.
That's amazing. That's Orange County. Sounds about right.
That's a Venom, man.
Let's go. Yeah.
Well, it is. It's a little bit like, you know, MCU movies aren't allowed. They don't allow an actor to be like, well, I'm actually going to get in the lobster tank and eat one. So get a couple of takes of that anymore. Everything is just way too planned to let crazy really seep in.
I wish it had been a good kind of crazy, like a watchable movie kind of crazy. Yeah. But it sure wasn't.
That movie's like a 10 out of 10 crowd pleaser. There's nothing you can do to stop Venom.
I know. And it seems like Sony is trying to bring Tom Holland into all of this. I think it feels like they're working, because there's a poster of Spider-Man in the background of I think it's the Mobius trailer, and it says murderer on it. And then you see Michael Keaton reprising his role as the Vulture So they're trying to do their own Spider-Man Sony universe.
Between the video game, Spider-Verse, you know, winning awards and everything else, Sony is actually maybe doing it right for the first time. Or at least they're making more money, so.
Well, the Spider-Verse movie had those two guys whose names, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who have a pretty good track record. And then the video game stuff it's video games all like on its own. Yeah, so I don't give Sony credit for
still the house that Sony's built on, though.
Exactly. I don't give them credit for it. I do blame them for like Venom and the original Spider-Man 3 and both Amazing Spider-Man movies. Like, that's what you get when Sony is in charge.
You know, I will say though, like, Loki gives a lot. Like, now I understand why like Marvel felt so comfortable playing hardball with those negotiations. Like, this was their really easy way to just kind of like take him out of the master timeline somehow. Like, I mean, it would have been very dissatisfying. We all would have hated it, but it would have made sense in some sort of way that they could have justified it as a narrative choice.
Yeah. But now it seems like he's just going to continue doing Marvel movies, but then also he has to do Sony movies or something too. Is that right?
I thought the deal was only for one more.
I think he's doing two more, or he's, you know, there's one more Spider-Man movie, and then there's one more Marvel movie he appears in. which people were thinking Multiverse of Madness, but there's no confirmation of that.
So it's still they could wrap this up at any point. I wish.
Yeah, Spider-Man could end this, his time in the MCU at the end of these movies.
And then they'll just reboot it all over again.
Yeah.
Right, they're still keep making Spider-Man movies. Don't worry, kids.
Well, and now they're bringing like Tobey Maguire, allegedly, supposedly, bringing back Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. So that would even theoretically could even open them up to do a follow-up to that, to their line of movies, theoretically. If Sony wanted to do that, they're like, oh, we're finally going to give Tobey Maguire his Spider-Man 4.
No one needs to see.
I would watch. I would be there opening day. I had my Google News alert set to Kirsten Dunst the second this Tobey Maguire news came out. I was like, you can't just bring in Tony or Toby. And sure enough, she's going to be a part of it too, is the rumor.
I mean, then I guess we're just holding out for Topher Grace. No.
Topher Grace would be so good for one of these movies. It's such a shame he got saddled with Venom in Spider-Man 3. Like, he would be a good Reed Richards.
Yeah, I could see that.
He was a casting choice off of like the anti-Tobey Maguire, and as opposed to like Eddie Brock. You know what I mean?
Maguire quite famously played the anti-Tobey Maguire himself in Spider-Man 3.
Right.
No, he was playing Crispin Glover in Spider-Man 3. No one will ever tell me otherwise. He's doing a Crispin Glover impersonation the entire movie.
Oh, I want to watch it for 5 minutes.
Can we watch it real quick?
Oh. See, this will not surprise anybody here, but I love Spider-Man 3. And that is not ironically either. It is such a mess.
I feel like I think I knew this about you, Max. That sounds familiar. I like how Sam Raimi it is.
Yes. He definitely feels unencumbered. And he also feels like, I have to finish this movie and give it to you, but I'm also going to wreck it enough that you're not going to ask me to make another one.
Yeah.
They were also, who is the villain supposed to be in 4? Like, it was
lined up. It was supposed to be the Lizard, the Dylan Baker from the first 3 movies was going to play his role as the Lizard. And I think
Rob is right too. This was like a Batman like 5 with Howard Stern as like
John Malkovich, I feel like.
As
the Vulture. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because Sam Raimi really wanted the Vulture and they wouldn't let him have it for 3 or something like that.
Yeah. But John Malkovich was like,
I bet his Vulture would have looked really cool also. I think the Michael Keaton Vulture looked awesome, but Sam Raimi's would have been like a whole new level of weird.
Yeah. It would have been very Sam Raimi, whereas the one is as Michael Keaton's is very MCU.
Yeah.
I think you would have gotten like Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin vibes.
As long as he's not wearing like an actual helmet, they could just put makeup on him. I mean, John Malkovich is already like a funny looking guy.
No, I think they would have done the classic Vulture with him and his bald head and like the white hair there and just like a green
Yes. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I weirdly had an action figure of that one from the old animated series, and I was a big fan of the Vulture. I think it creeped out my parents.
That's funny.
That's just explains all my daddy issues to this day.
I'm sure you had a lot of other things that were way more frightening going on.
Speaking of which, though, I think I might skip ahead and say my something gay about it early too, Brian, but for Loki, Owen Wilson and Richard E. Grant, and like, I don't know, and you know, they kind of worked for me. I always love seeing Owen Wilson, but something about like his Mobius was just, it was cute. He was very cute to me.
Yeah. I liked his little suit. I was looking at it.
I think like we're so used to seeing Owen Wilson like as like young, immature, like Hansel. So like seeing him with the salt and pepper and in a suit was like very rewarding as a game.
Rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, we can start to wrap up unless anybody has anything they want to say. Any final predictions for the future of the MCU? I guess this is really not the time to get into that. Is it?
Do you guys think you'll like Shang-Chi more or Eternals more?
Shang-Chi, I like the trailer more than the Eternals trailer. So if going off the trailer, Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. I think it just looks a little bit more fun.
I will counter that and say that Shang-Chi looks like more of the same and Eternals looks like it's going to be, maybe that'll be my August Marvel County.
There you go. There has been a tendency lately, just throwing this out there because it was something I noticed and I wanted to mention, where Marvel trailers end with scenes of people around a dinner table and like a joke being made. Because there was Eternals and Black Widow both had that same kind of like, and Shang-Chi doesn't have that, but it has a like this painful sort of like laugh line where she's like, we make a great team. And like, I really need Marvel to stop it. Just stop ending on the dumb jokes. It's not working.
It's like the slowed down pop song at this point. It's like, it's a movie trailer cliche.
Yeah. It's annoying. So Josh, you haven't been on the podcast before, but we always do a say something gay about it because the original idea was that we would, you know, spend an hour talking intellectually about film. And then at the end, we would say something gay about it because we're homosexuals and we're horny. It doesn't have to be sexual though. Sometimes, you know, it can be about fashion or something stereotypically gay. Doesn't matter what it is. It's something we started and we're still doing. So do you we can all do our say something gay if you want to go last to get a sense of what it is.
I think. Yeah, I keep just coming back to my love of Emily Van Camp and Kirsten Dunst. So I'll try to come up with some fresh material.
I mean, I love it. That's perfect. That's a perfectly good say something gay, Emily Van Camp and Kirsten Dunst, honestly. If you don't need to find anything else. Mine was just that Sebastian Stan, honestly.
Yes.
Sebastian Stan, I think he looks really good. And I like the short hair. He's had long hair through a lot of the movies. I'm not a big fan of long hair, but with the short hair and like the leather jacket. Yes. Here for it. Robert.
I think I'm going to go with the sitcom excellence in WandaVision and the fact that Deborah Jo Rupp was like so bossed that she got like super high billing for like being in a background shot. And, like,
yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah.
Love her.
Oh, let's see. I guess I already skipped ahead for, you know, I was feeling more of the daddies this time around. I guess my say something gay about it is I think most of the homosexuals on Twitter really latched on to the pew pew Florence Pugh meme, and it still makes me giggle for some reason.
I think my favorite meme was the Catherine Hahn winking that came out of it.
Have you guys seen that car commercial with Catherine Hahn as herself blasted? So there, I don't know what car it is, so this is not a free look it up, but it's like Agatha All Along commercial. And it's just a car commercial that where they play Agatha All Along and Catherine Hahn's like rocking out to the song. I'm so happy for her to get that money, but it was just it's amazing how this is permeated into the public consciousness.
So are there like a series of five Marvel car tie? I can't tell you what car.
I've seen one that has like several shows, but this one was just Catherine Hahn.
Well, they had the one with all of them, the Infinity War of the car commercials, if you will. But then they have the individual versions that are like slightly different takes of each of them, like for longer amounts of time. But I don't think I've seen the Catherine Hahn just by herself one. That's incredible. I need to hunt it down.
Oh boy, this is what Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock used to call corporate synergy.
Never badmouth synergy, Lemon.
It's been a long time since we've done a bunch of 30 Rock quotes on the podcast, but there was a period where James would always try and find a way to sneak one. Josh and Max and Rob, thank you so much to all three of you boys for coming on and talking Marvel with me. Josh, congratulations on your comic. I'm so excited to read more. Marvel, if you're listening, make it happen.
Just say something gay? Was it
I'm sorry, you're right.
I don't have a specialty one, but I would just say that I've been following Emily Van Camp since Everwood on the WB.
I remember, I feel like I watched the Revenge pilot with you.
Yeah, that was probably specifically so we could get the Emily Van Camp of it.
Yes.
Revenge
was
pretty fun season one, not gonna lie.
I think I watched I don't know if I just watched the pilot, but any revenge I might have watched, I would have watched with you, Josh.
Josh, I was also a big super fan of Brothers and Sisters, too.
Yeah, she's very good in that show.
Just the best worst on that. Just the best worst. And then fucking her fake brother.
That did happen, yeah.
There's a lot of unfortunate plot lines from that show. Let's just
Was Cela Ward in Brothers and Sisters?
No, Sally Field was in Brothers and Sisters.
Okay. ABC?
What are you thinking of?
Yeah. It was on like after Desperate Housewives.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, do you want to hit us with your social media?
You can follow me online at LostHisKeysMan or JoshTrujillo.com.
And I'm at Max Bever on Instagram.
I am Paths Will Cross on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TV Time.
Excellent. Thank you so much once again, guys. This was great. You can find the podcast on Piece of Pie Pod. That's at Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I am So Brian Rowe. That's Brian with an I, R-O-W-E. That is also on Twitter and Instagram and on Letterboxd. Give us a follow. Give us a like. We'll see you soon. Go see a movie this week.